Hey y'all, are you looking for Chlorella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore, don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic, super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Welcome, welcome, friends, old and new. This is the Know Your Rights Hour with co-host, doctor, attorney, and author Mayor Eisenstein, and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings here on blogtalkradio.com. At 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com. Wednesday afternoons, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. We welcome your live calls. During the live show, that number is area code 646-478-0772. You can call in just to listen by phone or to offer your comments or questions. That number again, area code 646-478-0772, and you can email us during the week, mayor, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com, mayor at homefirst.com, and attorney at vaccinerights.com, attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is October 27th, Mayor, our last October show this year, 2014. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and with me, the most I could ever boast, and the co-host, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Mayor, how are you this evening?
Oh, Alan, your introductions are always humbling. You know, I'm absolutely wonderful. I'm really, really wonderful, you know, that I mean, there's just so much going on in the news. I know you have potentially some guests with us this evening, and I'm excited to listen to what they have to say. But I just have to spend one or two minutes. I love nurses. I really do love nurses. You know, I find them the backbone of the allopathic healthcare system. But I have to say, I'm a little disappointed in the nurse. I won't even mention her name. You can find it on the news. Who came back from West Africa, and God bless her, she was treating Ebola patients, and she's part of the Doctors Without Borders. And allegedly, they know more about treating Ebola than anybody else. And she comes back to New York, and she has a fever in the airport, and they put her into quarantine for 21 days. And she makes a big fuss about how wrong this is, how her civil liberties have been violated. She hires a civil rights attorney to bring suit against the government. What kind of example is she leading, setting to the country? That is absolutely, besides vitamin D, vitamin C, and probiotics, which may be better than quarantine even, you know, this is the way you treat any type of infectious type of disease where you really have no type of treatment. I can you even imagine what's going through her head? That I couldn't understand that. She's worried about, they put her in a tent. She said she didn't have humane setup. I don't believe that for a second. You know, just kind of, I can't figure it out. It makes no sense. Along with the doctor who came back a week or 10 days ago, who goes to a bowling alley, rides the subway, you know, all these things, would, he should know better that you've got to take precautions. Goes visit with his family. You know, I don't know. I'm blown away by it. Do you think maybe, Alan, it's the doctors have this feeling that they're invincible. Nothing can hurt them.
Well, Mayor, two things come to mind as I'm listening to you say this, and as we talked briefly before the show, I was saying I'd heard a little bit about this on the news just earlier today, and I found myself, you know, scratching my head saying essentially the same thing. This doesn't make sense to me. This doesn't sound like what I would expect from any reasonable healthcare professional. So my thinking sort of goes off in two different directions, Mayor. One is, when things don't make sense, then maybe we're asking the wrong question. And what I mean by that in this particular instance is more sort of as a metaphor than a literal here. Is this something that has in some way been set up just because it's so obviously questionable, and then that has everybody talking about it? It helps keep awareness of and fear of Ebola in everybody's minds, because now everybody's wondering, are there going to be, you know, is she going to be turn out to have Ebola and be contagious, or there are going to be outbreaks, you know, and so forth. It just sort of heightens the whole fear factor. Whether it's something that's inadvertent or planned, it will have that effect. And that's what makes me wonder, is it planned? Because as we have been saying at the early in our discussions on this Ebola topic in recent weeks, that, you know, the way you make a market is create enough fear, and then you'll have the market for the vaccines that they're developing. And if you're going to develop it, let's go ahead and, you know, make as many as we can and sell as many as we can. And so I'm, you know, cynical in that respect, because it just doesn't sound like something that any reasonable person would say or do. And the other thing, Mayor, that comes to mind is I sort of waxing legal in the thinking here. You know, there is no such thing as an absolute exemption right, for example. That states, almost every state has laws where if there's a declared emergency, your religious or philosophical exemption can go out the window, for example. And as far as I know, Minnesota is the only state that has a law that provides some kind of an exemption right in the context of a declared emergency. And then at the federal level, anybody coming into the country from a foreign country. And this is not just something in emergency times. This is routine practice. If somebody comes from a country where they're, for example, yellow fever is the only vaccine that is required for international travel under the World Health Organization international health regulations, and most countries subscribe to that. And if you're going out of parts of sub-Saharan Africa or tropical South America, but you're coming out of those areas to the U.S., you know, you've got to have that yellow fever vaccine, and there's not even a religious exemption and no philosophical exemption available there. If officials think you may have been exposed, you wouldn't even necessarily have to have symptoms of any kind. If they think you've been exposed or have any concerns, they have the authority to quarantine you coming into the country. Now, you notch all of this up, or ratchet all this up a couple more notches when you get to something like Ebola, at least the way it's being reported. If this is genuinely the real disease, anything approximating the way it's being reported, this is not something you take any chances with. And so I would think, not even just a question of would they know to voluntarily do that, and of course a health professional you would expect to have the common sense to know that we're going to err on the side of caution and take 3 weeks rather than risk something that, as you and I and others have been talking about, Mayor, it's unclear at this point whether it's,
right.
Exactly how it's transmitted or how transmissible it is. And so it just doesn't make sense to me that they would do that. But the authorities, they have authority to do that, and I don't understand how getting a lawyer would get her out of that, especially if she had some kind of symptom. So that is perplexing to me as well, because, you know, I understand that the practical reality is that, yes, to one degree or another, you can buy justice in this world and system we have today, even though you shouldn't, you know, the system shouldn't work that way, that sometimes that's what it boils down to. But I don't see how you could buy your way out of this one, or, you know, strong arm your way with, you know, really tough or good lawyer or whatever. So the whole thing is perplexing,
Mayor. She did. In the meantime, the White House then calls the governor and says, take her out of a quarantine. And then both the governor of New York and the governor of New Jersey change what they just passed the day before. I mean, it's so bizarre, you know. All of a sudden, it's not a problem, you know. I mean, that's even more bizarre, you know. The whole thing's bizarre, you know. I mean, it's just really bizarre. And now we have a five-year-old boy who just came down with Ebola, who also came from I think Sierra Leone a few weeks ago. I mean, I think that the probability of a mass outbreak is unlikely. But I can tell you one thing, Alan, that no one has looked at, and no one knows: Ebola has never been in a cold climate, and it's always kind of died out after a small amount of cases, relative small amount of cases. All of a sudden, it's now in America, and it's going to get cold in the next couple of weeks. Will it go airborne if it gets cold? There's some theories about that. And will it act like the flu, but something that's very serious, as opposed to the flu, which for all practicality, even though all the propaganda, isn't that serious?
It's a really good question, Mayor, because this has always been the main outbreaks anyway in Africa, a very warm part of the world, Africa, as far as I know. So that's a really good question. It'd be interesting to see. You know, when you say, Mayor, you don't expect there to be any, you know, wide-scale outbreak, or that's a really low possibility of that. I hate to say it, but the first thought that comes into my mind is before or after the vaccines. So,
oh, my God, Alan, you are so right. You are so right. I mean, I tell you what the problem is. In this country, the treatment for infectious disease is antibiotics, antivirals, and vaccines. After that, they have no clue what to do. And even though we already know that the bacterial infections are already mutating so much that they're no longer effective, the antibiotics for the most part, the medical field hasn't changed their thinking. They haven't even remotely thought about anything else. That's their whole. So let's not even worry about pharmaceutical businesses and profits and conspiracy theories. Doctors are just so locked into that they can't even think past that, and they forget about public health safety. I mean, if I was the governor of New York, I would call the White House and say, no, we're not letting that nurse go. And anyone who comes from a West African country who's treated Ebola patients must be in quarantine for 21 days. It just makes sense.
Yeah, I can't see doing anything different. And because it makes no sense, and because it doesn't, I don't see how a lawyer gets you out of that one.
The threat scared the White House that politically they would look bad. That's my guess.
But,
but yeah.
Right, but the whole thing just makes, because it makes no sense, you know, from start to finish, the whole thing just makes me cynical. You know,
yeah.
Is this, are people really struggling with these kind of no-brainer issues, or is somebody setting this up in order to achieve some purpose, the least of which would be that this is going to keep it on front page news and radio shows all over the country and, you know, mainstream media attention. And the more that anything is going on in mainstream media about Ebola, of course, there's nothing that's going to get much attention for very long unless it's connected with fear or risk or potential harm and so forth. If somebody comes up with a, you know, the quick cure, it'll, you know, theoretically that would be in the mainstream media for a day or two, it would blow over, and then whatever else is going on would, you know, this is one way you keep it active, you keep the fear alive and grow the fear. Don't just keep it active, but keep it growing with these kinds of things. So again, whether deliberate or inadvertent, but because it doesn't make sense, I just have to ask, you know, is this really what's going on? Or is this just part of the larger propaganda program here? But, you know, with a lot of this, all you can do is speculate and then watch how it plays out, unfortunately.
Exactly, exactly. Well, one last word. Vitamin D, vitamin D, and more vitamin D. If you're only going to take one supplement this winter, I mean, I cannot even tell you, you know, how effective it is, how important it is, how it's going to lower your colds and flu and everything. You know, if you can't get it from the sun, which almost none of us can, almost all the vitamin D out there is good. I love ours, but everyone out there is really good. Vitamin D.
Reminds me of my family law professor in law school said the three most important things to know in family law for attorneys is know your judge, and know your judge.
Oh, beautiful.
So, sort of like, you know, in property, the three most important things, location, location, location. Okay, so,
right.
I may be biased here, Mayor, but I think it's in an appropriate and acceptable way. The best place I know to get vitamin D is from HomeFirst.com because it's a vitamin D with probiotics that helps the absorption, and that really maximizes the benefits of the vitamin D that you're taking. But also, those probiotics are good for your overall general health anyway, so it's just a great place to go for it.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay,
you're
welcome, Mayor. Thank you for making those available. We've got a caller, area code 310. You're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Brad. How are you?
Brad, how are you, my dear
Brad.
Friend?
Okay. You know, this thing, it's all a political circus. They're not thinking about public health. They're thinking only about the politics and the spin, especially with the election right here. All these people are running around with their heads cut off, and it's pretty sad.
It's very sad. Boy, you're so right. I mean, it's very sad. And, you know, it's funny. This is a serious problem. Most of the other vaccines that they mandate don't really have serious problems attached to us. Ebola, because we don't know. We really just don't know the natural history of Ebola. And as I was saying a few minutes ago, because actually my wife has said that to me, what happens in the cold weather? Will it become airborne if we have cases here? And so it's very scary. It's actually very scary.
The story changes every day.
I don't believe
anything these guys are saying because they're, like you said before, they make it up on the fly. No, you know, one other thing about the Africa perspective on it, you know, not only is it being passed human to human because of the outbreak, but the other thing you don't hear much about is, you know, these people are eating bush meat. And the bush meat, the monkeys, and the bush meat that they're eating, and they refuse to stop because it's the main source of protein for them, is also accelerating the caseloads over there. And you see, if you go on Google Images and you put in Ebola, you'll see barbecues filled with monkeys that they're killing from the bush and eating, and the monkeys are infected with the Ebola.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things that's accelerating all the cases over there, along with, of course, the, you know, people have it and they're just dying in the street. And, you know, you see these videos of they're going into these houses and the person's been there for, you know, a week, and all the other people are living in the house with them. And, oh my God, it's just horrendous.
And we're dealing with severe malnutrition and poverty. You know, the likes of we don't even know what it means in this country. Thank God.
That's
right. Wonderful. I agree with you. Thanks, Brad. Thank you so much. Be well.
Thank you.
Friend.
Take care.
Thank you. Alan, I totally agree with Brad. I mean, you know, there's just it's just unreal. I mean, it's so political, and you know, it just it's embarrassing. That's really the bottom line. You know, embarrassing to think that that in this great country, when you have a potential serious problem, it's dealt with so politically. I think of when the mayor of New York and the governor of New York were sitting in the news conference a couple nights ago, and they're saying, don't worry, it's not a problem. I would love to see a backdrop of they're going with spacesuits into the doctor's house. Was this the doctor now? I can't remember who they were talking about. It was the... the doctor's house. You watch him being brought in a spacesuit. You watch all the police and all the paramedical help in all these spacesuits and all this protective gear. And they're saying, don't worry, it's not a problem. No, it's not a problem. They closed down the bowling alley that the doctor went bowling. You know, they shut down the plane that he flew here. You know, if it's not a problem, why are they doing all these things?
Or why are they saying it's not a problem since they are doing all these things? And I'm afraid Brad's right. You know, it's all scripted. Doesn't necessarily mean any given part of it is necessarily true or false, but it's all scripted. And with the story changing, they're not doing a whole lot to make us all feel comfortable and solid about this. So, Mayor, are you by chance familiar with a law professor by the name of Francis Boyle? He's international law at the University of Illinois.
No, I'm not. You know,
I didn't know if that was a name you knew or not. Someone sent me an article from him. This is a guy who had some pretty interesting credentials. He was responsible for drafting the Biological Weapons and Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989. The American implementing legislation for the 1972 Biological Weapons Convention, and he served on the board of directors of Amnesty International in 1988-92 and represented Bosnia-Herzegovina at the World Court. I mean, this guy's been around the block. He's got a doctor of law, according to this article, magna cum laude, as well as a PhD in political science. He, someone submitted an article, looks like this, it's not dated, but it looks like it was written about a week ago or so. U.S. biowarfare laboratories in West Africa are the origins of the Ebola epidemic. And, you know, I've heard that idea put forth probably a couple, if not a few times in recent weeks. But I hadn't seen it from somebody with this sort of credential behind him, so I thought it was really... really interesting, but he makes reference in this article. The article, by the way, for listeners, this is at informationclearinghouse.info, informationclearinghouse.info, and I will probably put a link to this article up on the Pandemic Response Project website as well, which is one of my websites. But I'm going to get too bogged down in the details here, but... he's essentially saying don't pay attention to what the World Health Organization and the CDC say, and talks a little bit about the history in this article of the biowarfare. They have these facilities in these countries in Africa, which conveniently or coincidentally happen to be the ones where the outbreaks are occurring, because these countries are not signatories to the Biological Weapons Convention. So CDC and others concerned with biowarfare research can conduct that research more freely in these African countries. Now, he doesn't speculate in this particular article as to whether it's deliberate or an accidental release, but he seems pretty convinced that this is something that's from these bioweapons facilities right there in those countries where the outbreaks are occurring. An article worth looking at, folks, I think, and you know, another piece of the puzzle to factor in here.
So really scary. I mean, it's really scary because, you know, you kind of would like to think, to some extent, there are some ethics in people who are involved with things that affect people's lives. It's actually mind-boggling that there could even be a thought of something like that. Very frightening.
But once you allow the idea that if anybody else is going to be doing this, then we need to do it too and stay ahead of the curve. You know, you get into this whole cat and mouse thing. And, of course, publicly what they say is that they're only doing defensive kinds of research here. But the only way that you could really effectively do the most effective defense is if you're also researching the offense, so that you know what to be creating defenses for. And so once you open that door at all, Mayor, it's not like you can just, you know, stick your toe in and that's it. Once you open the door, you're in the room, and there's just no way to do it halfway that I could see that would make sense. I would not expect, I'm not happy about it because accidents happen, and this is the kind of arena where when an accident happens, the consequences can be catastrophic. So it is a concern, and I think we talked about recently, Mayor, where there was an article talking about how there had been just a large number of breaches of protocol with CDC and labs dealing with these dangerous pathogens. Even the best people with the best of intentions, as we assume there couldn't be anybody, you know, less than competent working in these kind of labs, but here they were documenting not just one or two, but dozens. I don't remember the numbers, but it was dozens of protocol breaches, any one of which had the potential to lead to catastrophic consequences. And so it only takes one accident. So it makes us nervous, and or worse if it's not an accident, because, you know, back in February 2009 we had information telling us that Baxter had sent contaminated flu vaccines to Europe, and the researchers, scientists in the Czech Republic, not out of an obligation, but just decided they would test some of the flu vaccine material on some ferrets, and all the ferrets died, and they checked the material, and they found live avian flu virus in there. Now, I remember talking to Dr. Tenpenny and probably some others who were saying there really isn't any way that that could happen by accident. The way they use these bio-level safety 3 protocols, that it would have taken a group of people knowing that it was in there. It's not the sort of situation where one psychopath with a key can slip in at night and pour a little test tube of, you know, bird flu virus in the vat there and then, ha-ha, I'm going to, you know, kill everybody kind of thing. But ultimately, whether this is something that could only happen or that did happen by accident or not, it happened. And here was the potential for a pandemic to have been started, and it's hard to know exactly, deliberate or not, what the consequences would have been. But here you've got a virulent virus, the avian flu virus, but it's not particularly transmissible. But then they had that mixed in with the seasonal flu, which was not particularly virulent, but was particularly transmissible. And if it's possible that those two could work in concert in some way, that you would have both virulence and high transmissibility, we could have had just an incredible pandemic in all over Europe and perhaps quickly spreading throughout the world had the doctors in the Czech Republic not discovered that and kept those flu vaccines from being administered. So it's just scary what the potential is when you start playing in those arenas.
Exactly, you know, and unfortunately, with so much political correctness, the best minds in medicine are afraid to go into these fields because they know that their thinking will be in their thought process, their recommendations will be encumbered by what's politically better. Very frightening.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Mayor, why don't we go ahead and, am I reading the clock right? Are we already at break time here?
Yeah.
Don't let me talk so much, Mayor. It makes the
I'm enjoying
fast.
Every bit of it.
Likewise. Well, let's go ahead and go to break here. We'll be right back. We have potentially a couple of guests joining us, but tons to talk about either way, and we'll see how that happens. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips, and we will be back in just a couple of minutes, folks, so don't go away.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently talked America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips. Mayor, a little piece of nonsense for you here before we go on. This comes from a listener passing something over from the Robert Scott Bell Show. And it goes like this. Riddle me this, Batman. Where did the first influenza infection of flu season come from since there was nobody from which to catch it? Is this evidence of the immaculate infection?
Nice. That's bad.
Okay. It ranks right up there with the lousiest puns here. Anyway, go ahead.
I've got some great news here. Ebola vaccine setback. GlaxoSmithKline now says it won't be ready until 2016. So we got a reprieve of another couple of years until we'll have mandated Ebola vaccine. I can almost guarantee you what happened here is they've done their polls and their surveys, and they can't sell the vaccine. No one's going to buy it. I'm convinced. So they're hoping to bring a few more cases here, get a few more. You know, there's not enough. There's outrage among the public. But I don't think anyone really has any great fear, as evidenced by the nurse and the doctor who didn't have any worry about it. They're tramping around the city, not worrying that they're going to have problems. So they haven't ratcheted up the fear factor enough yet. to release it. That's the only thing it could be, because I don't see anything else that would make any type of sense. Crazy.
And that's
really
crazy. Interesting, because I just saw an article recently talking about how all the manufacturers were going to have to get together or work together to produce enough vaccines to go around. And imagine them all working together instead of competing against each other, you know, for something. But that's real interesting. Either that or there's some arguing going on behind the scenes among the elites who are, orchestrating all of this. That's fascinating. How do you suppose they could drag this out for a year before it, you know, catches on and there are all the outbreaks?
No.
That's real interesting.
Yeah, they're waiting, because here it says the Center for Disease Control and Prevention has also said the virus could eventually spread to more than 1.4 million people based on current infection rates and projections. And they need enough of a scare so that they can convince the public to take it. The flu vaccine, they've used that fear of 36,000 people die every year. And it's still, they get pretty good traction for something that should have zero traction whatsoever, because it literally doesn't work.
Wow. Well, Mayor, we got another caller on the line. Shall we go ahead and...
Yes.
We have only one caller on the line right now, so you're on the air.
This is Dr. King speaking.
Hello,
Dr. King.
Welcome.
Well, again, I see y'all are talking about what people get scared by. That's very nice, but again, I'm going to tell you something that I think you should be thinking about more. There's a guy who recently published a book called The Biology of Belief, and it turns the world upside about what genetics is all about and what drives people. It says that perception drives your body to do things in response to what you perceive. So if you get to people feared up enough, then their immune system will be suppressed enough that they'll be easy to infect. So it isn't just being done for the effect of, quote, scaring people. It's done for the effects that result from scaring people.
And that makes a lot of sense, you know. But the scary thing here, Dr. King, I believe this is a potentially real problem. You know,
it's a real problem. The human race has survived worse. No, I don't want to die either, but getting afraid about it is not going to help anything.
Right.
If getting afraid is helpful, I would say go do it. But being afraid is anti-helpful. All it does is make your immune system weaker, your risk of dying bigger. So instead of being afraid, just do whatever you think is necessary to prepare to protect you and yours, and don't worry about it. Because after all, it is in the hands of people far outside us in terms of the powers that be, or even more importantly, the powers that really are. Power that is outside of all of us.
Exactly. I think the thing that disturbs me so much, political correctness should go just so far. We talked a little bit earlier about the nurse who came back from West Africa, she hires an attorney when they put her into quarantine for violating her civil rights. And I said to Alan a little bit earlier, Dr. King, I guarantee you if this nurse was the head of a school program, she would have no qualms in throwing out every child who didn't get a hepatitis B shot, something that's clearly not infectious as such, she is causing to ratchet up fear by people saying, oh, now she's walking around, but I don't understand it. I just don't understand
it.
Well,
again, the reality is the governors of the states are reacting to the reality that people who were in the voluntary quarantine system ignored it. You had a doctor who was walking around driving, well, he went bowling.
Went bowling, yeah.
Yeah, again, even when he might be symptomatic. Give me a break.
Yeah.
If you could trust people to do what they're supposed to do in a case like that. But I remember when it used to be that everybody coming to this country had to go to Ellis Island and spend some time there before they got on the ground here. That was to quarantine them until they were proven to be acceptable for being accepted in the United States. And there were people that were put in hospitals and they were made well. And if they had some disease which that nobody could cure, they were sent back. They were said, "We can't let you in the country."
And it wasn't considered a punishment. I mean,
they were trying to keep them well and away from everybody else, so it wouldn't spread.
It was very interesting. The New York Post, far from a right wing newspaper in New York, had an article that they claimed that 30% of the healthcare workers in Bellevue Hospital didn't show up and called in with the blue flu or so.
What would you do? And there's no real policy. There's no real whatever. It's people running around with the chickens with their heads cut off. And for what I'm reading about these other hospitals dealing with this, even if they have a reasonably decent quarantine program, they don't have a real good program to handle all the waste that they generated.
Exactly.
So
there are pictures of some of the police officers who had cleaned the perimeter of the doctor's house, and they were wearing hazmat suits, and they threw it into the garbage cans in New York.
After all, everybody else throws their garbage in the garbage can, so why not? So what's infectious? What the heck?
Yeah, I know. It's just absolutely.
We don't, whatever. So the reality is the best thing to do is what the people refuse to do, which is to tell people you're coming from a country where this disease, which we don't have a good way of controlling or whatever, is rampant, then you can't come. Because the one country in Africa that has done that, what little infection they had disappeared.
Right.
They closed all the borders and they said, nobody can come in from there. You from there, go back. When it's over with there, then we'll think about letting you in.
Exactly.
We're not talking about millions of people coming from West Africa to the United States every day, 100-some-odd people. Tell them just take a longer vacation.
Exactly. Dr. King, one of the things I read today, actually my wife brought it up to me, and I'm kind of interested in your input on this, that we don't know the natural history of Ebola in a cold climate. Essentially, till now, it's only been in a very warm climate. And there's been some theories that it could become airborne in a cold climate. What's your thought on that?
Dr. Eisenstein, have you seen the 1980s report when they talked about how they're going to make it aerosolized so they could spread it better? Oh, you haven't. Well, that problem's been solved. And so if that problem's been solved and that report exists, I would assume anybody who got a copy of that report could read it and figure out it can be aerosolized so that people don't like us too much, even if it's not naturally aerosolizable, doesn't naturally, they could easily, there's lots of dead people that are full of Ebola, harvest the stuff, put it in some kind of aerosolizer, and let it go loose in places.
It's not scary.
I worry about that because, again, I can't control those kinds of things. What I can expect my government to do is what it's supposed to do is close the borders and protect the people.
Exactly.
They don't believe in closing the borders and protecting the people because you don't make any money if you protect the people because you got to have the disease causing someplace. Why do you think they let people into this country without routinely screening them for measles so they can have measles outbreaks to put fear into people that want to get their measles shots?
Yeah. No,
That's all it's about.
Yeah, no, I totally agree about that.
This is just part of the game. So my reality, when the game is rigged, my dad said don't play. You do what you can. Take precautions. Wash your hands more frequently. Take more vitamin C, a little more vitamin D. Get plenty of rest. Get whatever precautions you think. If you think that nano silver 10 ppm solution is something good to have, get a bunch of bottles and put them away for in case you start showing symptoms of something that you don't know what it is. Yeah, those kinds of things. I mean, normally I have gotten flu in my lifetime more than once, or a bad cold or something, and I found that, I go into my high-dose vitamin C, high-dose vitamin D, extra rest, lots of liquids, a bunch of other supplements and whatever to keep my general supplement level up, and usually in a week or two, it's gone.
Exactly.
Now, there are people who die from those things every year. They call them flu, even though they're not in most cases. I think it's only 18% are flu. So I would assume 18% of the deaths are from flu then. So they talk about a huge number of deaths, which, although that's not really fair because actually 90% of those are from pneumonia, which has nothing to do with the flu per se. It may be some part of the other 10% might be, although most of the death certificates say less than that. But, you know, I'm not going to argue, but, again, if the goal is to care for the health of the people, then do things that make them healthy. And putting fear across the newspapers or whatever, if you believe that people's health can be influenced by how they perceive the world, is not contributing to their health. So if you really were worried about my health, you would just tell me factually we have six people over here and there and whatever, and leave it alone. I'm not about what could happen or how many might die or whatever, because I can't control any of those things, nor can, except by getting afraid, can I react to them. And getting afraid doesn't make my health do any better. Therefore, then you're trying to make me sick. And I don't think I appreciate that very much.
I love it. Thank you, King. As always, thank you so, so much. Your input is always, Alan, help me with some of the good words.
Well, always insightful, always adds more than what we have and know to bring, and I always feel...
Well, it's because I've lived long enough to look at the outside of the box at everything. I know, stand outside the box, whatever you see, the box has been given to you, jump outside and look at it from the outside in.
But you also have the scientific expertise and spend the time looking at the research, too. So you always bring such an informed view to the table, as well as the ability to stand outside the box. It's a powerful combination.
Well, again, as I said, you know, when you got to know, when I say jump outside the box, it helps to look at what the options are, where to jump, you know? Because sometimes
not out of the pan into the fire
can be confused.
Yeah.
Right. So,
you know, you could be in
and that's where
a good place.
And that's where your great judgment comes in, then, because you always seem to land in a great place and come back with something that enlightens us all further. I appreciate every single time you're on. I know
you
speak for me and our listeners. But.
Yeah. What I kind of talk about was this wonderful thing called influenza. I mean, I published this nice paper, a couple of them. One was telling the people that in New York City that the hospitals that refused to vaccinate their demand that their all their employees get vaccinated. At least they care about their employees a little, it seems, because you got a vaccine that's not proven to be safe, causes disease, spreads disease. It's the live virus one. Why, except to make people sick, would you be using a vaccine like that? Because that's what the influenza vaccine has been proven to be, because I'm supposed to rely upon gold standard studies. And the only gold standard study says that's exactly what it does for the inactivated vaccines. And all the studies for the live virus vaccines show that it infects people and that they can shed it for more than 21 days, up to 28 days, or who knows how long, really, because they didn't check everybody to see how long that they were spreading it. But let's just say it's 28 days. So if it were me, I'd say if you're going to get a live virus flu vaccine, quarantine yourself in your home for 28 days after that, so you don't go around infecting people. Now, you might not infect people, but you're at risk of infecting people, and I can't know for everybody who's going to be which way or not. So if you want to get a live virus flu vaccine, so you don't like shots, then go be my guest, but in quarantine for 28 days, or just a month to make it easy. People have trouble counting days, but months they can easily count, usually. That would make it fine with me, but from a practical point of view, given the data we have for the outcomes of vaccinating the population with influenza vaccines, it raises sickness. Even if it may suppress a few influenza cases, because it causes 3-plus times as many non-influenza cases of viral infections that have the same symptomology as the flu. They're called influenza-like illnesses.
As an outsider to the medical community, sounds like flu to me.
Yeah, well, it sounds like flu to everybody. And the most recent thing, which I thought was interesting, the CDC had a wonderful write-up out of a wasn't a 100% vaccinated population. It was a 99% population. There was a crew on board a minesweeper in Philadelphia Harbor for refitting and whatever. And in spite of the fact that they have 102 people aboard, so I would assume 99% means that 101 of them were vaccinated, because I don't know how you vaccinate fractional people. But they said, you know, 99% were vaccinated. And the person who was not vaccinated did get the flu, along with 24 people that were vaccinated who got the flu. If the vaccine, and they got supposedly one of the strains that was close to what strains are, and they should have been protected. But they weren't. That means that the effectiveness of the flu vaccine, this was for the last year, is 75% or less, or 76% or less, or pick a number or less, because it's a small group and you can't generalize to huge populations. But all they were interested about was to say, well, in some highly vaccinated populations, you still can get the flu, still can get influenza. By the way, they didn't check to see what all the other sicknesses were, the people who were sick who didn't have influenza.
Right.
I have a paper
here in front of me, Dr. King. Let me read you the last few lines. This is from the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly. Yeah.
Here's,
the single best way to prevent influenza is to receive a vaccination every year, the author concludes. It's like, hello. If I think they would say the same thing if every single sailor came down with the flu, they would still say the same thing. You know, it doesn't make a difference. You know, it's mind-boggling.
Well, again, Einstein said it, it's attributed to saying it best. Keep doing the same thing over again and expecting an outcome is the definition
difference.
Of insanity. You know,
right.
Doing it every year. It's insane because you're not going to get a different outcome. It's going to protect everybody? No, it never has, never will. And according to the only gold study that's ever been done, it causes more disease than it prevents by more than a factor of two.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much, Dr. King. We have another caller on the line, and please come with us as often as you can, Dr. King. We have a caller on area code 239. Can you please give us your name?
Hi, it's Amy. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Amy.
Sure. I see a lot of people comment that there's only 1% of the population who don't vaccinate. Do you gentlemen have any predictions, or do you have any idea on if that number is correct, and if not, what it would be?
Very good question. Well, it's kind of interesting because I'm going to pull it up here. I have it somewhere here on my computer.
There's a very recent report, Mayor, from Mortality and Morbidity Weekly that came out with a figure. They looked at data from most of the states, and they said that the median exemption rate was 1.8% for the 2013-2014 school year. It's the same number they came up with a year ago. From the 2012-2013. Now, that's a median figure from most of the states. And there was a peer-reviewed published medical study in, I forget which, from earlier, like 2004, and they had figures saying that nationally it was like 1.5% to 2.5%, something like that. It seems to hover around, give or take, the 2% mark on average, but then there are some states that are claiming figures as high as 5 or 6%. So it just sort of depends on where you are and who's counting what.
And Alan, how do
you
count
how they're counting?
You count adults who never get vaccinated for all practicality? You know, or do you just leave them out of the mix?
The figures I was referring to were school children. So
school children, right.
Yeah, looking with respect to mandatory vaccines for school enrollment, and then, you know, how many of those enrolled students then are claiming exemptions. And so it all depends on how you count, because I've seen, you know, the same information reveal different statistics. You know, do you count everybody who's not fully vaccinated as not vaccinated, or are you counting just those people who are formally exercising an exemption? It's not entirely clear to me when a state says, oh, you know, we have, you know, 6-8% of our people are not vaccinated and everybody should be horrified and run out and get more vaccines, well, you know, what are they counting? But I think in the study that just came out in MMWR, Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, that they were looking at, I believe they were looking at formerly exercised exemptions and the national median with respect to most of the states that were involved in that survey or study was 1.8%. Now, I can tell you, I've seen an article recently that talked about, you know, this is one of those kind of, gee, do they really pay people to study stuff like this kind of ideas? But there was a study looking at healthcare professionals that concluded that when the hospital mandates the flu shot, they have a higher flu immunization rate amongst the employees. But the article that was talking about that I saw recently was bragging about the fact that they, this was the Henry Ford Health System in Michigan. I've had clients up there in the last couple of years that they have less than 1% of their employees exercising an exemption. That's consistent with the anecdotal information I get, which is anything but, you know, scientific. But I've had nurses, for example, from three different parts of the country who say that they were told by administrators that their respective hospital systems had had over 1,000 exemption requests, more than 1,500 in one case, and then the administrators brag that we only allowed 4 exemptions in our whole system and something like that. So that would be, you know, these would be far less than 1%. And I suspect there are much lower exemption rates amongst healthcare workers, for example, within hospitals that mandate the flu shot as a condition of employment compared to children in school.
And so the answer is it's we don't know the exact number, but without a doubt it's growing. And it's kind of interesting, even the numbers 1%, 2%, 5%, what it's getting so much exposure. And that's generating lots and lots more people to read more, to investigate more, and that's exciting. That's what will put an end to this nonsense. You know, well-informed people, like in California, Alan, didn't they just say that the people who are not vaccinated, the dumb people who are not vaccinated, are the college-educated? Well, you know, it's like these are the dumb people. The smartest of our society is not vaccinating.
Yeah, and it's interesting there. You know, there was, I was just looking at an article that someone sent me today talking about nurses. Let me see if I've got this in front of me or not. I think it was in, Boston, that were speaking out against the vaccine, and they had been accused of allowing something that the critics were referring to as a pet peeve, as, you know, allowing them to put their own interests over that of, you know, other workers and patients and so forth. Well, these nurses are a little more educated than to allow something like that to just, you know, go by unaddressed. And so the response was, the flu vaccine is only 59% effective. And by the way, that particular study that I believe they're referring to, the 59% figure was actually what's called a relative risk reduction. The same data in that study found that the actual risk reduction was 1.5%. But let's go ahead and go with that 59% number. The flu vaccine, they're saying, is only 59% effective. It comes with serious health risks, which are not disclosed to those receiving it. As of November 2013, the adverse event reporting system, the federal system, received 93,000 reports of reactions, hospitalizations, injuries, and deaths following flu vaccination. And this includes 1,080 deaths, 8,888 hospitalizations, 1,811 related disabilities. These nurses, I mean, they see this. They work with this stuff every day. They're not going to just roll over and play dead when somebody makes up this nonsense about how, you're being a terrible person for refusing a flu shot.
Yeah, and that's why it's so disturbing that the nurse in New York who came from West Africa didn't really live up to a higher standard. Alan, I think we're just about come to the end.
Yep, we have. Boy, the evening just flew by, Mayor. Privilege and honor to be with you as always. Just really
my privilege too.
Terrific. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Doctor, attorney, and author Mayor Eisenstein, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, here on blogtalkradio.com, live Monday evenings, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, proudly rebroadcast on naturalnewsradio.com, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific time. We will be back with you next week, folks. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you then.
Let freedom ring. Let no one.